So when you get to the corner of Smith and Orchard, you're going to want to take a
you
left.
You are not going to
then
believe
Then what you're
going
to do is turn
Marcy
onto Marcy
and
Avenue.
Just broke up.
And go past
and
the first three lights
happy
and then
it.
Take the next left.
I don't really
drive
think
five
she's
more
happy,
blocks,
but
and you should be
who
there.
Who am I to judge, right?
Park
anyway,
on the right.
That's
I'll
what
see
I
you later
last
tonight.
Night.
It's hard to concentrate on two things at once, like texting and driving. Stop the text, stop the wrecks. How will you stop texting and driving? Tell us at StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome to another edition of Out There. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. For the next hour, I've been wanting to do a piece about light pollution. And now that the lights are long and the leaves have fallen from the trees, I'm noticing it more. I think many people probably don't notice it or aren't that aware of it being a problem. Sometimes I feel terribly suburban and privileged to spend my energy thinking about it. But at the same time, it's literally something in my face every night and in the face of other animals, and something that can potentially be resolved or at least improved, often easily. It's also something the city has addressed in their zoning code, which isn't enforced. All I'm asking is for lighting to be according to city code. So the city code requires that when new light fixtures are installed or old ones replaced, the bulbs should be shielded from shining above horizontal. Lights that produce glare or light trespass onto other property are generally prohibited. Exterior residential floodlights should also be shielded and be on motion sensors. Some exceptions may be allowed to this, like on national grid poles. I've seen many new lights installed that meet the code, like the lights by Northampton Market or the parking lot lights at Meadowbrook, but there's so many that don't. Parking lot floodlights that are turned up, casting light all over the neighborhood and city. Look at most parking lots, behind the Florence Community Center, where the radio station is here, behind JJ's Tavern near Florence Paint and Decorating, Cooper's Corner, the Silk Mill, the Water Department, City Hall, the list goes on and on. So you might not realize the city even has lighting standards. Now, the Planning Department and the Building Inspector have a proposal before City Council which states that the building commissioner shall determine if light levels are being met, and based on this assessment, the property owner shall replace or modify fixtures to achieve compliance. And the new proposal also says, all site lighting not attached to the building itself in business districts shall be turned off 1 hour after the close of business and or up until 1 hour before the open of business, unless otherwise approved by the planning board through site plan review. I went to the city council meeting on November 6th where the proposal was discussed. First, there were some comments from the general public. Now I'm going to see if I can play them.
Hello, my name is Jasper Lopienski.
Oh, volume.
I would like to speak in support of the ordinance regarding business lighting. The concern, I believe, that was raised, that brought it before, is light pollution. But there's another concern, which I think is also a reason before it, which is actual pollution, because the lights are not powered by magic. In most cases, they're not powered by solar panels, although I could probably help with that. But they are powered by burning fossil fuels. But we have before us tonight a very small step that could actually force businesses to reduce their emissions and, in addition, reduce their electric meters. Since I am, you know, probably the only one in this room that's actually going to have to live with the consequences of those actions, you might be able to vote however you want, but I'm just saying it's probably a good idea to take a first step. Thanks.
Sorry about the quality on that. Hopefully the rest will be a little louder. Again, these are some public comments before the Northampton City Council at the November 6th meeting.
I'm Ruthie Woodring, 8th High Street, Florence. I was taught to always turn off the lights when I'm not using them because mountaintops are blown off to get cold to keep the lights on. I love the mountains, and I love the trees, so turn off the lights, please. And I love the stars and the dusk and the dawn, but these things are muted when the lights are left on. I know there are many afraid of the dark, but statistically, the fear is based on a farce. In the dark, people fear being robbed or attacked, but when harsh lights assault you, it's hard to fight back. There are long-term effects on our bodies and minds, like suppression of hormones, causing cancer sometimes, or rhythms thrown off, yielding chronic disease, not to mention disruption for critters and trees. We're animals in an industrialized glow, needing natural darkness, but nowhere to go, because the lights are left on all over NoHo. The problem is large, but we can all do our part, like turn off the lights in the industrial park. Thank you.
I'm John Gauster, Board of Directors of Northampton. About 20 years ago, I met a young Korean named Un Oh. Un was born in Seoul, South Korea, moved with his family to a suburb of Washington, D.C. when he was 10, and then came to Swarthmore College, a suburb of Philadelphia. I was an astronomy professor at Swarthmore College at that time. Note that his entire life, Seoul, Washington, Philadelphia, was in major metropolitan areas. In the summer of my sophomore year, I hired him to assist in my project to map the entire sky in the light emitted by hydrogen gas clouds in interstellar space. I wanted to test the equipment in a darker sky than was available at Swarthmore. So Ann and I drove to Colgate University in Hamilton, New York. We arrived shortly after sunset. As the sky slowly darkened, Ann busied himself with setting up the equipment. As he finished, he turned and started to say, "It's all ready to go, Professor," when his jaw just dropped. As he finished, he never finished that sentence. Looking up at the now dark sky, he saw the Milky Way for the first time in his entire life. Remember that he had lived for 20 years in major metropolitan areas. He and never in a dark sky location. "Wow," he said, "is that what you were talking about last semester?" And he'd never seen it. Although we live in a small city, not a big metropolitan area, I fear that many of our citizens, particularly the young, have never had the opportunity to see the Milky Way and experience the deep personal connection with the universe of shame. So I urge you on the council to approve the proposed revision of the ordinance concerning sight lighting standards. Thank you.
That was John Gausted talking to the city council. So James Lowenthal, an astronomy professor at Smith College, also gave a special presentation about the negative effects of light pollution on humans and animals and how glare and misplaced lighting decrease safety, and he cited studies that don't show any clear conclusion about more light causing less crime. James gave examples of some cities that have light curfews, such as Paris, France, Tucson, Arizona, and Riverside, California. I'll play an interview with James later in the hour. Then at the meeting, Police Chief Russell Sinkowitz gave a presentation from another point of view. I have some clips from that.
Chief, are you up?
Good evening, all. And I fully support the value of well-designed, downward-only lighting that does not affect true color perception to the human eye. I do not support the proposed ordinance, not only from my personal experience, but based also on some multiple studies that I researched showing that lighting is universally acknowledged as being the second most effective crime prevention and reduction strategy, second only to increased police patrols. You got to understand, lighting has five primary positive purposes: deterrence, detection, surveillance, fear reduction, and liability reduction. These will all be negatively impacted by abolishing outdoor freestanding lighting in commercial and business districts. I also believe the proposal, and during this discussion, there was an alternative that was thrown my way to say, would you consider motion detectors? I don't believe motion detectors are an effective alternative. They can be easily thwarted. The police department will be getting calls for false positives due to winds, due to animals, or whatever. And virtually the prolific use of video monitoring that we rely on a lot from different businesses that we've rendered useless. But these businesses have invested a lot of money in video surveillance that we have access to. Or if you're a citizen driving by a dark lot, will you be able to see any suspicious activity or criminal activity and then call 911 from your cell phone? The public, after all, we rely on it as our eyes and ears. Suspicious and criminal activity. And then again, although not directly affected by this ordinance, if as a resident, would you feel okay with the government telling you you could not use lighting for the safety and protection of your own property and your investments that you have? I want to answer that for you. You know, go to your heart, go to what you feel, go to your common sense about whether or not this getting rid of parking lot lights for all the reasons I've cited versus the effect of light pollution because of the reflectance of lights off the ground, what's the greater good? What's the greater positive you can do?
What would happen?
So, regarding the reflecting of light off the ground, it's estimated that even well-shaded, well-shielded lights, about 30% of the light reflects off the ground up into the sky, kind of like the sun reflects off the moon. Mr. Sienkiewicz also cited studies that suggest increased lighting does reduce crime. The studies on crime could be hard to draw clear conclusions from because things happen like if a dark area is lit up and it appears there's more crime than before it was lit up, it might just be that more crime is now visible and reported. Or on the other hand, if a dark street is lit up that used to be dark and it appears there's less crime, the crime might just be getting displaced to somewhere else. And then there's the question of how we define crime and how much attention we give to the police definition of crime versus how much attention we give to broader definitions of crime, such as air, noise, water, and light pollution, or income inequality, or institutionalized racism. The police definition of crime is what grabs headlines and people's attention and inspires fear, often fear out of proportion to actual risk. I was looking at a chart about the odds of dying from selected causes. This is from 2010 in the United States from the National Safety Council. These are the lifetime odds of death for selected causes. Now, the total of any cause, of course, is 1 in 1. You're going to die sometime. The chance that you'll die from heart disease and cancer, 1 in 7. Chronic lower respiratory disease, 1 in 29. Intentional self-harm, 1 in 103. Motor vehicle incidents, 1 in 112. And it goes on down and down from there. A pedal cyclist is only 1 in 4,974. Let's see. This unintentional poisoning by and exposure to noxious substances, that's up there with motor vehicle incidents. There's falls, assault by firearm. It goes down less and less. And I think the, like, nowhere in the top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, in the top 5, 2, 3, 4, is assault by another person. But then many assaults don't involve death. They just involve pain and trauma and things like that. In terms of public safety, there are many groups and agencies involved, and the police are just one of them. There's so many ways that we can harm ourselves, like I just mentioned, suicide and car accidents are up there. And chronic disease, often due to environmental factors and poor or limited choices, are also common. Violence against one another, usually by people who know each other, it hurts a lot of us too. So other groups that are part of the public safety and harm reduction picture could be the zoning department, the planning board, the health department, fire department, the DPW, healthcare workers, teachers, doctors, social workers, etc. Basically, everybody has a role to play to look out for each other. And the power granted to the police should be kept in context. At the city council meeting, it seemed like the police chief held a disproportionate amount of sway. He basically said, everyone knows people feel safer and are safer when lights are on. And besides, property owners won't go for being told by the city what they can and can't do to protect their property. But that's what the city does all the time. That's why we have codes and ordinances. to make guidelines to help us all share this space peacefully and respectfully with each other. We don't get to do whatever we want on our property when it affects our neighbors. In terms of reducing crime, studies about lighting seem inconclusive, but studies about the harmful effects of having no nighttime seem more definitive. At the city council meeting on the 6th, the city decided to accept the first part of the proposal to give the building commissioner more authority to enforce the current lighting standards, but they postponed a decision on the second part of the proposal about requiring businesses to turn off parking lights for certain hours of the night until more research was done. The council wanted to know, how has it been in cities like Tucson or Riverside, which have lighting curfews? They asked the police chief if he would be able to talk to a police chief in one of those cities to get a sense of the effects of decreased lighting there. I'm not sure when the city will make a decision on this, but city council meetings are the first and third Thursdays of the month. Public comment is at 7 p.m., and anyone's welcome to speak for up to 3 minutes about any topic, even if it's not on the agenda. So next I have a 20-minute interview I did with James Lowenthal about this issue, and particularly what individuals can do around their own homes to improve night lighting. First, I just wanted to mention this is Valley Free Radio, WXOJ 103.3. And this is Out There. Thanks for tuning in. So I'm sitting here with my friend James Lowenthal to talk about lights, lighting, light pollution. James, can you introduce yourself a little bit and tell me how you came to be interested in this?
Sure. Hi, Ruthie. Thank you. I am a professional astronomer, and I started as an astronomer, as an amateur astronomer, when I was a kid. And I grew up partly in Manhattan and partly in rural Connecticut, where we would go with my family every weekend and every summer. And so I really got to see pretty dark skies on a regular basis. And I fell in love with astronomy when I was a kid and built a telescope in New York at the Hayden Planetarium. And one thing led to another, and here I am, a professional astronomer. But along the way, I learned all about what a difference it makes and whether the skies are light or dark. In New York, of course, you can see only the very brightest stars, and even then only if you know to look for them. Out in the country, you see the Milky Way without looking for it, and there's everything in between. For a professional astronomer, it makes an enormous, enormous difference. It means we can do our research or we can't do our research. It's a deal breaker to have light pollution, and we seek the darkest sites in the world to do our work at. But it has huge implications for everybody in the world, not just astronomers.
What are some of the other effects of it?
Some of the effects of light pollution. Well, let me just continue on the astronomer vein for a second to start that off. Nature gave us this incredible gift, which is this unbelievably beautiful, spectacular starry night sky. And everybody in the world used to see that all the time. Before electric lights, everybody knew the constellations. Everybody knew what phase the moon was because you could travel easily when the moon was full. And you could plan outdoor activities at night when the moon was full, and people did that and knew that. And people knew how to navigate by the stars, and they knew what the Milky Way looked like. And we evolved, like all animals, to depend on the night. We need the night. We need dark to sleep in. We have photoreceptors in our eyes that are sensitive to the presence of light. And in the dark, our bodies produce melatonin, which is a cancer suppressant. And when it's daytime or light at night, melatonin is suppressed, and as a result, shift workers experience elevated rates of cancer. So it's absolutely hardwired into our bodies that we need the night, and it's beautiful. It's just the only way that humans can really connect with the cosmos directly, with any object besides the sun and the moon and the earth. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of cosmos out there.
Yeah. So I wanted to pause that interview for just a minute. And James was talking about how people used to navigate a lot more by the stars and all that, which reminded me of this song. The Eric Bibb.
When the sun comes back, when the first quail calls, follow the dragon gold, for the old man is waiting for carry you to freedom. Follow the dragon gold. Well, a riverbank is a mighty good road. Dead trees show you the way. Left foot, peg foot, traveling on. Follow the dragon gold. Follow the dragon gold. Follow the dragon gold. For the old man is a
back to the interview with James Lowenthal. That was Eric Bibb talking about light pollution. Getting back here,
just
sorry.
Like feeling more human.
I don't usually think about it that way, I don't think about it that way on an emotional level, personally. I do think, well, we 7 or 8 billion people live on this little planet, and it's really just a tiny little speck, and if somebody snuffed out that speck and everything else stayed the same, everything else would stay the same. It wouldn't make any difference to anybody else, to anything else. It wouldn't make any difference to our sun or the other stars. But that doesn't stop. Excuse me, that's our dog. A little less noise over there, if you wouldn't mind, Gracie. But that doesn't stop me from being awed and inspired by the beauty of it. And I think that probably goes for a lot of other astronomers.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit more about specifically light pollution in Northampton. What kinds of lights at night are hard for you as an astronomer to deal with?
Well, most of them. It's one of the beauties of being an advocate for light pollution control is that it's so easy to find bad examples because they're everywhere. They're all over America. They're all over Massachusetts. They're all over Northampton. Now, with that said, I really want to say that Northampton has a very good outdoor light code that was updated most recently in 2006 and addresses many of the major issues regarding light pollution. But it needs updating, and it has been enforced only spottily. And so there are many examples of lights that have gone in, even just in the last year or two, that are not in compliance, either with the 2006 code or with the code before that. The code before that said, thou shalt not trespass. light trespass is light on your property that shines onto your neighbor's properties. And that was already forbidden before 2006. And glare was forbidden. Glare is the light that shines in your eyes that you don't want. So when you're on the road and a car's headlights are shining in your eyes, and that's glare. And it stops you from being able to see other things. Your eye just can't accommodate such a high contrast between that bright light and the darker things that you want to see. So there are examples of this all over the place. Anybody can go outside on any street in Northampton and see examples of glare. If you can see the light bulb itself, that's glare. If you can see it from sideways, if you're standing right underneath it, that's fine. But if you're standing yards or a dozen yards or a quarter mile away and you can see that the light bulb itself, that's glare.
So you're saying that that's not per city code anywhere you can see that?
I'm saying that city code prohibits that for new construction.
Okay, so some things are grandparented in.
Lots of things are grandparented in, that's right. But even before 2006, glare was prohibited officially, but very rarely enforced.
Do you know when before 2006?
I don't know when. So as I go around, I look at, let me just follow up a little bit. So the design of the light, basically the light should be in a downward-facing can so that the light goes down only, not out sideways, and certainly not up. But there are some other things that are a problem. The two other main things are lights that are too blue and lights that are too bright. And the blueness is an especially important issue right now because LEDs, light-emitting diodes, for which a couple of physicists just won the Nobel Prize for inventing the blue LED that lets the mix of LED colors turn into a white light, which everybody wants. Blue ones are especially bad at light pollution. I mean, they're good at polluting. They're bad for astronomers. They're bad for seeing at night for a couple of reasons. The eye is very sensitive to them at night. They cause more glare than other colors, and because they bounce around in the atmosphere more, which is what makes the sky blue. So even if all other things were equal, if you put a blue LED in place of even an old high-pressure sodium light, we actually make light pollution worse by as much as 5 times. So for astronomers, this is terrible, but really for all people, it's bad news, and for animals, it's bad as well, because that blue light is messing with circadian rhythms that animals have evolved to depend on.
Aren't they more efficient than like the other?
LEDs in general are absolutely fantastic, and they are efficient. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't go out and replace all our lights with LEDs. We should do that, but we should do it carefully. We should do it with the right LEDs. They are available. Specifically, they're a warmer color, what we call a warmer color, which for those of you who are out shopping right now at Home Depot or wherever you're doing this, we want something that has a 3,000 Kelvin temperature or lower. That's more like an incandescent bulb, the colors that we all grew up with. But if you look outside now, you'll probably see some LED lights, or maybe you'll see cars with LED lights that are very blue. Those are more like 5,000 Kelvin lights. They're hard on the eyes, and when cities put them in, people complain. So there are a couple of cases where that's happened, and I hope that does not happen here in Northampton more than has already happened.
Are the Kelvins related to the wattage, energy consumption?
It's not the wattage, no. It's just it's the balance of colors. Uh-huh. It's referring to the equivalent temperature of an object heated up in an oven until it glowed with that color.
Uh-huh. What are sources of... the dog again.
Sources of hairballs.
What are places you can get the kind of LED lights with the warm colors that you're talking about? Do you know?
Yeah, you can get them at most home supply stores. I just picked one up at Foster Farrar. So shop local, go to Foster Farrar. Here's a great thing. My neighbors have, here in Northampton, have really been have been very accommodating and curious and interested and ready to try swapping out light bulbs that they were using for porch lights that were unshielded, that were not the light in the can, that were just the light bulb itself, like a compact fluorescent or an incandescent bulb that was just broadcasting glaring light all over the neighborhood. They were willing, many of them, several dozen, to swap out those bulbs for bulbs that I found, including the one I just picked up at Foster Farrar. It's a down-facing, if you can, if your light bulb in your porch fixture is down-facing, you can put one of these in, the light will go down only. Many LED lights also broadcast light in all directions, but there are some that are directional. They're sort of like a spotlight or a floodlight with a narrow flood. They go down only. They save money immediately because they're only 4 or 5 watts. They produce plenty of light for a porch light, and they're available in 3,000 Kelvin or warmer colors. So that's a perfect way to save money, to make your house and neighborhood more beautiful, to reduce glare. It makes it easier for drivers and pedestrians and cyclists to see, especially for old people whose eyes are less able to accommodate glare. So they're easily available. And then you can find them online. Mm-hmm. You can go to Bulbs America, or you can go to Lowe's.
I don't know if Gracie Fairbairn is going to come up on the recording. How much do these lights, the LEDs, cost up front? Isn't there more of an upfront cost?
Yes, there's more of an upfront cost. It might cost as much as $20 or so. But they'll save, over their lifetime, they'll pay that back many times because they last for tens of thousands of hours.
Yeah. You mentioned saving money, but also saving electricity and pollution,
yes,
too.
Yes, like, saving electricity and pollution. Now, that, right. And I could, I don't know off the top of my head what the pounds of CO2 saved is, but mm-hmm. we could calculate that.
So do you have any ideas about retrofitting lights that aren't like downward facing on people's porches, but just like retrofitting things like the common like floodlight security
yes.
lights
yep.
that people have?
Yeah, so common security lights that are floodlights that people often have attached to a motion sensor, maybe looking over their driveway or their yard or their front porch, are typically poorly aimed. They typically are really meant to flood everything in light, not just the owner's property, but usually thoughtlessly everybody else's property around the area too. So even just taking one of those and twisting it so that it aims down only makes a big difference. But if the light that's in there is really a floodlight, it's still probably going to cast a lot of glare and light trespass on your neighbor's property. So you can easily, in most cases, just unscrew the light bulb that's in there and replace it with one of these LEDs that I was just mentioning that is more directional. It's a bit of a narrower beam, and if you aim the whole fixture down only so that it's essentially horizontal, or that the light is vertical, the lens of the fixture is horizontal, then you solve a lot of this light trespass and glare and light pollution problem.
Yeah, a lot of fixtures you can't, or at least my neighbors that I was working with, you can't tilt it down. So with ones that you can't tilt down that are going to shine sort of out anyway, do you know of ways to like make or buy some sort of can?
There are a couple of retrofits available. I'm not sure I know of any specifically for the general security light that has, you know, the two floodlights with the motion sensor in the middle. There are retrofits available for barn lights and lights that you see in a couple of establishments around town dating from the 1970s and 1980s that are super bright, but not usually on people's homes. There is one in a neighbor's house that shines in our backyard when it's on. It shines into our back windows when it's on, but it's off most of the time. Mm-hmm. I've actually offered to buy them the can that's made just for that light, but they just agreed to turn it off. So that's the best thing to do. But
yeah. I've made some out of like just like flashing and rivets.
Yes.
But it's kind of time consuming, so I was wondering if there's more of a mass produced option out there.
Yeah, I think there are. Well, okay, I'm sure that there are. I think the best thing to do really is just get a new fixture that doesn't require you to break the law by illuminating your neighbor's yards. Yeah.
If you have anything else to say, you can say it, because I had the next question on the tip of my tongue, but I'm somewhere.
Well, I want to address one more thing. Maybe you were going to ask about the shield on my streetlight here.
Yes.
So I was going to talk about streetlights, but do you want to ask your question first?
Oh, here's what I was going to ask you. So what about lights that have like a cover, like something where you can't tilt it at all, but to mute the light that's coming out, like on the rail trail?
Yes. Are you thinking on the rail trail about the lights in the tunnel?
Yeah, the tunnels.
Yes. In that case, it's really unfortunate that we didn't get a chance. You know, those lights just went in, and it's totally unnecessary.
Wait, is the tunnel, or the rail trail between Northampton and Hadley and Amherst, Nawatak Rail Trail.
The Nawatak Rail Trail. So there are two tunnels, one under Spruce Hill Road and one under Route 9, and both of them have exceptionally bright, brand-new, very blue-rich LED lights. I actually went out with my light meter and measured how bright they were, and it was shocking. I've measured the light levels of lights all over town, street lights. The one outside my house measures 0.7 foot candles. So that is about 70 times brighter.
Where does it measure this? Like at just standing right underneath it?
Standing underneath it with the light meter at the street level.
Okay.
It measured 0.7 foot candles, which is 70 times brighter than the full moon. Some of the lights in downtown I measured at a few foot candles, so maybe 200 or 300 times brighter than the full moon. When I held the light meter in the tunnel as far as I could get away, but directly facing those LED lights, 11 foot candles. That's 1,100 times brighter than the full moon in a tunnel that people on bikes are riding into, coming from a completely pitch black, dark, unlit rail trail where their eyes have had miles to dark adapt, and suddenly you're hit with this blinding, blue rich, super bright glare that I think is it causes much more harm than it solves. I think it's a safety issue. I think going into it and coming out of it, it's just blindingly bright, and I think cyclists they just won't be able to see.
Yeah.
It's not safe, and it's completely unnecessary. I don't think it solves. I just don't understand what problem it solves.
Uh-huh. But you think they can be like adjusted?
Oh yeah. So you asked what to do about it.
Yeah.
Well, I've been thinking, and I've actually been communicating with the head of MassDOT District 2, Al Stegman, with some ideas about this. And I don't know yet if it'll happen. But the two ideas I had were, yes, to put up a little shield made out of something that didn't hurt when you hit it. So probably not sheet metal, but you know, maybe some kind of foam rubber that would just block the view of the light as you're coming into the tunnel. If the light shines on the wall, that's fine. You just don't want the light shining in your eyes. Again, the rule of thumb, if you can see the light directly, that's not good. You want to see the thing that it's supposed to illuminate.
Because the lights are like wall packs, would you call them?
Yes, they're like wall packs. Wall packs
but
are those.
You can see them, like they're shining across the tunnel.
That's
you can
right.
see them when you're coming down the path.
That's right. They are poorly shielded. So again, what you want is the light to be in a can, where the can is directing the light where you want it. You don't want to be able to see the light directly itself with your eye. So it causes a lot of glare if it's not shielded. So I've been thinking, yes, we should shield it with some very simple little mechanical opaque strips of some material that will block the view, and because they're so blue, I thought it would be easy to just cover them over with an amber filter, and I think that would make it much more better, you know, easier to see, and not so much glare and not so much contrast with the darkness outside that you've just come from and that you're heading into.
So tell me, how did you get the shade put on the streetlight outside your house?
Well, it took only about 3 years and about 20, 30 phone calls and emails and a $40 check. I took a telephoto lens and took a close-up picture of the streetlight, which is, you know, 20 feet up in the air, or 30, whatever it is, I don't know, 20 feet, say, and I could read then what the manufacturer was. I went online and I researched exactly what model it was. I found out who owned it. Was it the city or was it National Grid? I then found the part that was available, which was a shield called the house side shield as opposed to the street side shield, and I bought it. I couldn't buy it directly myself. I wasn't allowed. I had to do it through Hamden Zimmerman, which I was happy to do. I then delivered it to the city, and after another bunch of bureaucratic snafus and go-arounds, I actually left the country and lived elsewhere for 7 months, and when I came back, it still wasn't done. And then finally, National Grid came out and installed it, I think at city expense. So a lot of money had to change hands for a simple little piece of street of sheet metal, but it makes a world of difference.
Yeah.
And now that street light doesn't shine into our house and our guest room and our yard, and I'm able to show people the stars from our backyard, and I couldn't do that beforehand.
No, that's great. When I was living on Bradford Street in 2003, I think National Grid was offering to tilt people's lights or shade them or some way so they wouldn't go in people's bedrooms. And so I complained, and the guy came out there. I was there when he came out, and he climbed up the ladder, and he tried to, like, move the light or tilt it, but he couldn't get it to tilt. So then he went back out under his truck, got something, and he went back up the ladder, and he took black spray paint and spray painted the side that faced their house. Did the job.
Well, there's another... These issues come together in a big way because all across the country and probably around the world, there's a tidal wave of interest in LEDs because they are so energy efficient compared to the old lights. And as a result, many, many, many cities and towns and states are replacing willy-nilly all of their streetlights, which are responsible for the great majority of light pollution, replacing all those streetlights with new LED lights. And most of them are bad. Most of them are either poorly shielded, worse yet, poorly shielded and very blue.
Like the one on the front steps of City Hall?
Like the one on the front steps of the City Hall, or the ones in the Armory Street parking lot, which are very high up, very bright, and very blue. And I think it looks terrible. Does it look, try it. Go to the Armory Street parking lot and ask yourself, does this look nice? Does it look welcoming? Does this look like a human-friendly, pedestrian-friendly place? Is it inviting? I don't think so. And it's causing more light pollution.
Thank you. So that was an interview with James Lowenthal, astronomy professor at Smith College, talking about light pollution. You've been listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio every Wednesday from 4 to 5. Some other shows on Valley Free Radio that you might like. Farm to Fork does a replay on Thursdays at 11. Also on Thursdays at 2 is the Enviro show. I think they replay their Tuesday show on Thursdays. And on Friday, a new local show, Civil Politics, Friday at 7, you might like. If you're looking for a good resource about light pollution and things you can do, the International Dark Sky Association has a website that's very helpful. It's www.darksky.org. I have a flyer from them which has some pretty neat pictures in it. One of them is a picture of a exterior floodlight, like outside of someone's garage, that is shining on the driveway. It casts quite a bit of glare because it's not very shielded. And then there's another picture right next to it that shows the light being shielded from the camera just by the hand of the person who's taking the picture. And once the light is shielded, you're now able to see an intruder standing in the gate. Anyway, the Dark Sky Association, International Dark Sky Association, has a lot of helpful things in it. Also, if you are trying to think about ways to communicate with neighbors about options for better lighting, the website has some flyer sort of materials as well. Again, it's darksky.org. Some more interesting things I found in my research about lights and light pollution. Street lights at night. Here, I found this on Wikipedia. It's generally accepted that public illumination was ordered in London in 1417 by the mayor, but there's no firm evidence. Paris was first lit, like you're talking about streetlights, or sort of like streetlights, not really, by an order issued in 1524. And in the beginning of the 16th century, the inhabitants were ordered to keep lights burning in the windows of all houses that faced the streets. By an act of the Common Council in London in 1716, all housekeepers whose house faced any street, lane, or passage were required on dark nights to hang out one or more lights to burn from 6 o'clock to 11 o'clock under the threat of a penalty of 1 shilling as a fine for failure to do so. Good thing I wasn't living back then. Something else interesting in technology, there's lunar resonant streetlights that increase or decrease the intensity of the streetlight according to how bright the moon is. So one thing I wanted to talk a little bit more about are people's fears of dark places and just trying to put risks in context. Here's a quote from John Paling from the Risk Communication Institute. It says, "The public tends to respond to risks on the basis of emotions rather than on the evidence of what facts from past experiences indicate. It's important to distinguish between perception and reality when it comes to deciding how much time, money, and worry to devote to a particular risk. The risks that get the most attention in the media and in people's minds are not the risks that kill or harm the greatest number of people." I also found an article entitled, "Are Runners Likely to Be Targets of Violent Crime?" And that tries to put in context some of the fears and risks and that people have. So I'm going to read some quotes from this. This is posted by Dave on October 23rd, 2013, internet stuff. He says, "As the days get shorter, I hear more and more concerns about safety from crime during runs, both in online forums and from my running friends. Soon, for many of us, it will be impossible to go for a run outside of normal working hours without running in the dark. Runners, especially women, are concerned about the possibility of being attacked when running on dark, isolated trails and greenways. But how significant are these concerns? When we hear of a case like the Central Park jogger or others, are we terrified because it's an example of an all-too-common occurrence? Or is it only surprising because attacks like this are rare?" The author says, "I decided to look into crime statistics to see if I could parse out the actual danger runners face when heading off into the darkness. Unfortunately, the U.S. Department of Justice, while it does track violent crime nationwide, doesn't have a readily accessible statistic for attacks on runners. But I can offer a few thumbnail calculations that may help you understand how much risk you might face by going out for a solo run in the dark." The report gives some good data on crime in the U.S., and we can use it to get a rough sense of the crime dangers runners may face. In 2012, there were 12,765 murders in the United States. 9,917 of the victims were male, and 2,834 were female. That means that the average American had a 0.004% chance of getting murdered that year. But most murders are committed by people who know their victims. The random guy jumping out from behind a bush is responsible for relatively few murders. Indeed, only 1,557 of the 12,000-plus murders in 2012 were committed by strangers. When you limit the murders to the categories likely to affect runners, like excluding barroom brawls or gang wars, the number drops below 400, or about 1 in 100,000. And again, runners are likely to be only a portion of these cases. That said, people aren't just worried about getting murdered. Rape is a serious concern as well, especially for women. The numbers of rapes are much larger, as this report shows. In 2009, there were 327,000 reported cases of sexual assault of women in the United States. That means an average woman had a 0.2% chance of being sexually assaulted that year, over 1,000 times the likelihood of being murdered. Again, however, the random guy jumping out from behind a bush sort of rape is much rarer. 78% of assaults were committed by someone known to the victim. Less than 14% of rapes were committed in open areas like parks and greenways. it's not necessarily valid to suggest that we can combine the stranger rape percentage with the open space percentage to get a percentage of rapes committed by strangers in open spaces, but that gives us a figure of 3%. I think it's reasonable to guess that less than 3% of all rapes are this sort of random guy jumping out from behind a bush attack. Even so, it's something to be conscious of. He goes on a little bit more. Let's not forget that most rapes go unreported. So how does this compare to other dangers runners might face, such as getting hit by a car? Once again, it's difficult to find statistics just for runners, but we can find statistics on pedestrian deaths and injuries. He goes on to say that female runners are about 4 times as likely to be injured in a car crash than to be sexually assaulted. Again, you want to be careful about all these things, not getting hit by a car, driven, sexually assaulted, all that stuff. So I have a few more clips I would like to play. One is from one of my housemates, Tammy. I asked her some thoughts on light pollution.
So when I went to France a few years ago, we went to visit a friend in Lyon. And we found it really interesting because we actually biked around a lot at night to visit a lot of the, you know, the city and the area. And it was really beautiful. And along the riverway, they have a really strategic lighting plan where it's not producing light pollution because of the way that the lights are. So they have a lower level light, but it is still lit. Like, you can still see, but the lights are... have a special covering, so the light's not flashing up into the sky. It's actually focusing down into a certain area. So it feels safe, but it's not like floodlit. And it just felt like you could actually see the night sky in a very large city such as Lyon. You actually could see stars, which we thought was very interesting.
How did it compare to here, the night sky you can see in Northampton?
Let's see. I would say, you know, it's hard. It's Northampton is a much smaller city than Lyon, and I would say that I was surprised that I could actually see a lot more night sky there than I could in such a big city than I could here. I feel like in Northampton you have to go outside of the city a little bit to see the night sky, like into the hill towns. So I felt in Lyon, like, right being in the middle of the city and actually looking up and being and seeing stars was really surprising. So I would say that I probably saw more night sky, and that was just the way that they had done the lighting. And I feel like having lighting things up more wouldn't necessarily change it. I feel like there's a middle path that we can take where we can maybe change the way we light things.
I've been working hard the last week on this show about light pollution, and tonight, about 9:30 at night, I just needed to get out of the house and I decided to go take a walk. And usually shining into our backyard are a lot of bright lights from the silk mill and Florence wall packs from the side of the building. And then there's also a really bright floodlight that shines down the bike path towards Hatfield Street. But I went outside, and I went out to the bike path, and I started to walk, and realized that all those lights which shine into my window at night, they're all off. It's like a gift from the universe. I've never in my life seen them off. At first, the bike path and the parking lot that's usually lit up look kind of dark and scary, but once you start to walk down it, I'm just so happy to be able to see the moonlight in the woods without the glare. I really feel like this one night of darkness in this area that's usually lit is a gift that I might not ever have again. And I kind of seems like I feel like sometimes I'm the only person that even cares, because I think that most people probably do like having things lit up at night.
Starry, starry night. Paint your palette blue and gray. Look out on a summer's day with eyes that know the darkness in my soul. Shadows on the hills. Sketch the trees and the daffodils. Catch the breeze and the winter chills in colors on the snowy linen land. Now I understand what you tried to say to me, how you suffered for your sanity, how you tried to set them free. They would not listen, they did not know how. Perhaps they'll listen now. Starry, starry night. Flaming flowers that brightly blaze. Swirling clouds in violet haze reflect in Vincent's eyes of china blue, colors changing hue. Morning fields of amber grain, weathered faces lined in pain, are soothed beneath the artist's loving hand. Now I understand what you tried to say to me, and how you suffered for your sanity, and how you tried to set them free. They would not listen, they did not know how. Perhaps they'll listen now, for they could not love you, but still your love was true. And when no hope was left in sight on that starry, starry night, you took your life as lovers often do. But I could have told you, Vincent, this world was never meant for one as beautiful as you. Starry, starry night. Portraits hung in empty halls, frameless heads on nameless walls, with eyes that watch the world and can't forget, like the strangers that you've met. The ragged men in ragged clothes, a silver thorn, a bloody rose, lie crushed and broken on the virgin snow. I think I know what you tried to say to me, and how you suffered for your sanity, and how you tried to set them free. They would not listen, they're not listening still. Perhaps they never.
This has been Out There on Valley Free Radio. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! There's some things on this computer that